As we get started, I need to ask if anybody knows whether or not the fourth and fifth graders are also supposed to be in kids' home worship. Is anybody? Yes. Yeah, so if you have a fourth or fifth grader, they need to go to kids' home worship as well. They're going to work on their Christmas song. I'm glad that's right, because I was thinking my son was just pulling a fast one on me. That's why William said he had to go, so I was like, well, I need to check, see if this is right. It's that time of year for me to kind of struggle with my voice a little bit. Really, it's just kind of the weather here, this wonderful weather here in the Bluegrass State. But then in addition, I did coach basketball all night Friday and then all day yesterday, and so that has something to do with it as well. But as I was telling somebody else, I'm not really going to be preaching today as much as just talking. All right, so we're going to talk together today about being neighbors, and that way I can keep my voice maybe at a lower tone. So you have to have your listening stance. You have to bring your listening stance maybe to hear a little bit better today. I've titled my sermon this morning, "There is no I in food." And it's kind of a dumb title, really. But it comes from one of my favorite coach sayings from my youth. I always loved it when coaches would say that there's no I in team. And I was always drawn to team sports and always appreciated a coach emphasizing the importance of playing like a team. I love it. I love watching teams when they work well together. However, I did point out to my high school basketball coach once that even though there's no I in team, there is a me. And so that kind of defeats the whole purpose of the saying. But he just told me to shut up. Anyway, the title this morning is "There's No I in Food." Meaning that food always tastes better when it's shared with someone else. And as I've grown older, I've just come to be convinced and convicted that food just doesn't taste as good when you eat it alone. I've shared before about my good preacher friend in Croatia. Many of you that have been to Croatia know Mislav, who, when traveling to the United States for the very first time several years ago, experienced the biggest culture shock for him when he discovered that Americans actually bought coffee in drive-thrus and drank it alone on their way to work. He just couldn't wrap his mind around that. For Mislav, coffee is something that you sip on from this little tiny cup that could also be like one of the tokens on a Monopoly board. I mean, that's just like, it's like the thimble. But you sip on this little cup of coffee for hours as you meet with friends. That's what coffee is for. It's never something to drink alone. And I'm beginning to think the same thing could be said about food. So, you've noticed the for sale sign on the stage the last couple of weeks, and as I've said, we're in the process of moving here at Southside. We're moving from like this building being our central location for ministry as us as a church to our homes and our neighborhoods being the place of ministry. And I came across a very challenging statement this week in my studies that I've been thinking quite a bit about, and I wanted to share it with you this morning. The author stated that our homes are the most underutilized physical resource in the kingdom. I really thought that was a challenging statement. I think he's probably right, as I've thought about it this week. You know, long before the church had pulpits and classrooms, the church had kitchens and dinner tables. The primary gathering place of the church used to be the home. And so the point of the for sale sign is just to serve as a reminder. So years from now, when you think, man, didn't Barrett pull out a for sale sign on the stage one time? Like, what was that all about? I just wanted to serve as a reminder for us to always be thinking about how we can be a people who do less and less on this campus and more in our homes and in our neighborhoods for Christ. If someone were to ask me today what they could do to seek the lost, I would simply encourage them to love their neighbor literally, the people who live on their streets. And so we've been talking about five practical ways to love our neighbor, and they spell out bless. And the very first one was the B, that's begin. That's the one I had to kind of work, you know, like prayer. I didn't want it to spell bless. So I had it's begin with prayer. That's the B. That's the one that might be a little hard to remember if you're kind of thinking back through it. But we want to begin with prayer. We want to talk to God about our neighbor before we go talk to our neighbor about God. And so that's where we start. And then the L that we've looked at is listen. We want to take a listening stance. We want to be a people that learn to listen to God, listen to His word first and foremost, and then listen to others. We want to be a people that are quick to listen, right? Slow to speak. Slow to become angry and frustrated when our neighbor parks their car on the sidewalk, thinking that it was part of the parking lot. We want to be slow to become frustrated and angry, right? And quick to listen, slow to speak. That's the L. And then these last three that we're going to look at over these next 3 weeks spell out the E, the S, and the S. And where I've taken these three from are three statements from the Gospels. So there's three Son of Man came to statements in the Gospels. That's how they begin. Jesus says, the Son of Man came to blank. And that's where we get these last three. Now, as I've said that, you might have quickly thought of two of those. Those are going to be the S and the S. Mark 10:45, Jesus said, the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. So that's going to be next week in that first S. And then the second S, the second Son of Man came to statement is out of Luke 19:10. Jesus said, the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. That's our last S. But what about the E? What's the third Son of Man came to statement? Well, it was at the very end of the text that Ronnie read for us this morning, out of Luke 7, that same text is also found in Matthew 11. But Jesus there says that the Son of Man has come eating and drinking. And so the E of bless is to eat. Now, the two S's are about the purpose for the Son of Man coming, to serve and to seek and save the lost. But the third one, this E, is more about the methodology. How is Jesus going to go about serving and seeking? Well, He's going to do that by eating and drinking with people. One author writes that the best definition of the gospel is this: Jesus ate good food with bad people. I love that. It's interesting when you read through the gospels, and you read about Jesus, every time you see Him, He's either at a meal, coming from a meal, or going to a meal. You know, just in the Gospel of Luke alone, we see Jesus in chapter 5 eating with tax collectors and sinners in the home of Levi. In chapter 7, He's anointed at the home of Simon the Pharisee during a meal. In chapter 10, we find Him eating in the home of Mary and Martha. Chapter 11, He condemns the Pharisees and the teachers of the law while He's at a meal. Chapter 14, He's at a meal when He urges the people to invite the poor rather than their friends to their meals. In chapter 19, He invites Himself to a meal at the home of Zacchaeus. Chapter 22, he hosts the Last Supper. And then in chapter 24, as the risen Lord, he has a meal with the two disciples on their way to Emmaus. And then later, he eats fish with his disciples in Jerusalem. And so it's almost every turn of the page we find Jesus at a meal. In addition, two of the most notable miracles Jesus performed were centered around food and drink. His very first miracle that John tells us is a miracle where basically, as you try to figure out why did he do this, is he just did it in order to keep the party going, right? If you remember, Jesus called for six ceremonial water jugs to be filled with water, and then he turned it all to wine. I read in a commentary recently that the math on this miracle equates to just less than 1,000 bottles of wine. And it wasn't the cheap stuff, right? It was like the really good stuff. And so Jesus knows how to keep a party going. The second miracle is probably one of the very first you learned about as a child, and that's the feeding of the 5,000, where Jesus takes a boy's lunch and feeds thousands of people. And so page after page, again and again, we see Jesus fulfilling this statement that he makes here, this that the Son of Man came eating and drinking. You know, in the text that Ronnie read for us earlier, the focus of that text in Luke 7 here is on the eating habits of both John and Jesus. It's hard to stress properly when you're teaching the Gospels the central importance of table fellowship in that culture. It was so important to that culture. It was so important to the ministry of Jesus, so important to the life of the early church, so much so that here two prophets are being publicly dismissed with strong attacks about a point that really seems of little consequence to us today. Yet for that culture, who you ate with was everything. John is primarily known for his solitary practices. I remember as a kid hearing the Bible stories about John living in the wilderness and eating locusts with honey and just thinking, wow, that's really strange. But these kind of solitary practices of John was primarily what John's known for. Similarly, Jesus is primarily known for his attending parties and feasts, hanging out with sinners, tax collectors. And so the critics of John here say that he eats with no one, and therefore he must be crazy. He must have some kind of demon. He's off his rocker. He doesn't eat with anybody. On the other hand, critics of Jesus say he eats with everyone, and therefore he must be morally depraved in some way. He's a drunkard. He's like one of them. And so what they're saying is that neither one should be taken seriously simply based upon their eating habits. Yet here at the end of this text, Jesus makes sure everyone knows that eating and drinking is precisely the very thing that he came to do. The Son of Man came eating and drinking. And all that that meant in that culture, in that society. You know, there's a kind of a biblical word for this that we read about in the New Testament, and it's the word hospitality. And I use the word biblical on purpose to help us differentiate between the hospitality of Jesus and what perhaps usually comes to mind when we think of hospitality. Like what comes to my mind when I think of hospitality is like Martha Stewart and doilies. You know, it's like, why would I want to do that? I think most often we think being hospitable means to entertain, right? Break out the fine china. that has dust in it, on it, because, you know, it's been in the cupboard for the last 6 years. You know, inviting family and friends into our homes for a meal and a night of entertainment. And I want to be real clear, man, there's nothing wrong with that. That's good stuff, and that's fun times. However, this entertaining form of hospitality falls short of the meaning of biblical hospitality as practiced by Jesus and his early followers. In the New Testament, the word for hospitality is actually a combination of two words, love and stranger. It literally means love of stranger. In other words, hospitality is the practice of making a stranger feel like he's one of the family. In Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 2, there's this great kind of mysterious sort of verse that says, "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares," right? But I love the emphasis there that the writer has to make to say that do not neglect practicing this love of strangers on strangers, right? We're really good practicing hospitality on one another, right? And that's really what Peter is calling the church to do more of in chapter 4 of his letter when he encourages the church there to practice hospitality one to another. We're good at that, but I love how the Hebrew writer emphasizes to not neglect this practice to love the stranger to strangers. For who knows, you could have entertained angels unaware. In Romans chapter 12 and verse 13, Paul wrote that we should make this kind of hospitality a practice or a habit in our lives. We want to make it something that we pursue, that we make a habitual, something that becomes routine, something that becomes a practice for us. You know, hospitality is a practice that could be kind of maybe considered sort of a spiritual discipline even. But it's also helpful, I think, to think of hospitality as a process. I like to think of hospitality as the process of moving from stranger to acquaintance to relationship with someone else. And in this context of this series, we're talking about our literal neighbors. So I like that. That helps me. That gives me something to kind of wrap my brain around of hospitality being a practice, but also being a process. And it's this process of moving from stranger to acquaintance to relationship. You know, really, what we've focused on so far in this series, prior to this lesson and these last three, is kind of moving from stranger to acquaintance, right? We've just kind of talked practically about learning our neighbors' names, praying for them, taking a listening stance, right? All those things kind of help us move. We had that block map that I had on everybody's seat that I hope maybe you're filling out and putting names on. You know, all that kind of moves us from that stranger to acquaintance. But these last three, starting with today, are meant to help move us from this acquaintance to a relationship. And today, the focus is on that E, eat. You know, I've never liked the term evangelistic tool. It just kind of seems, I don't know, it makes me think of passing out tracts and things, and I've done that. I've never liked that term of like having a tool of evangelism. But if there is one, as we read the Gospels, at least the one that I see Jesus use more than any other is something that we all have in our homes. It's a table. It's a table. I want to share a video this morning. It's a wonderful video. It was sent to me from Kathy Hobbinrich, and it was sent to Kathy from her daughter, Kristen. And it's a wonderful example to us about neighborhood hospitality and the importance of a table. So let's watch this together.
I always thought I'd go far away on mission. I really did. I really thought my calling would be international, and I never in a million years thought that the Lord would ask me to walk outside of my door in the mission field where I live and get to know my neighbors. I'm Kristen Schell, and I live in Austin, Texas. I am a wife and a mother of four children. Any given day, I am in the kitchen or in the minivan. I am active in the kids' school. I'm a writer, and I volunteer at church. We've been in this neighborhood almost 10 years. I always knew we were supposed to love our neighbors because that's the great commandment. But how you live that out day to day is hard, especially when you don't know your neighbors, which is the situation I was in. I did not know my neighbors. Sure, I knew, you know, a handful of them. And so there was this huge question, what do you want me to do, Lord? Here I am, Lord. What do you want me to do? Do you want me to walk across the street and bang on doors? Do you want me to take cookies? What do you want me to do, Lord? God answers prayers in really winsome ways. I was hosting a party with a friend in our backyard, and I didn't have any tables. And so I ordered a picnic table from Lowe's. And when it arrived 2 days later, I knew that for the purposes of the party, I was gonna have it in my backyard. But as soon as that party was over, I was moving that table in the front yard, and it was gonna be a gathering place. And so I painted it turquoise, which is my favorite color. And I did. I put it outside underneath the tree in the front yard. It was awkward at first. I have this table. It's bright turquoise. It's sitting in the front yard. And now I'm like, well, now what do I do? So I took a whole bunch of stuff out with me. I took my phone and my journal and my computer. And I even I had some art stuff that I was working on because, you know, I needed to look like I was just doing something. By going out front, I was saying to God, here I am, Lord, your will be done. Go before, behind, and beside me into the neighborhood. And that very day, life changed. And I met a neighbor within 3 hours of putting a table out in my front yard. A lot has happened since putting the table out there. There are a handful of women who are now very close friends who I did not know. It has become kind of a gathering place.
I'm Bob. This is my daughter, Peggy.
So one of the best things is just the sense of normal community, everyday life. The neighborhood kids come over. They'll do homework when the weather's pretty. We've had lemonade stands, hot cocoa stands. More intimately, it's a place where I can meet and have met neighbors who now pop by with coffee and just for 15 minutes, a conversation over coffee that wouldn't have happened. The Lord has taught me, and I am learning to be present. It sounds like it should be a no-brainer, but listening is not a skill that came naturally at first to me, nor was being present.
It's great to see you.
Loving my neighbors has taught me how to love God better. It's drawn me into deeper relationship with Him. You don't need permission or a program to go outside and be who Christ has called you to be. When we open up our front door and we take 3 steps right out our front yard, good things happen. Open up your door and let God do the rest.
Max Lucado writes that something holy happens around a table that will never happen in a sanctuary. In a church auditorium, you see the backs of people's heads. Around the table, you see the expressions on their faces. In the auditorium, one person speaks. around the table, everyone has a voice. Church services are always on the clock. Around the table, there's time to talk. And if you really think about it, are we more likely to convince our neighbor to come to a church service where we symbolically drink our Savior's blood and eat his body? Or to come over to our house for a burger? The E in bless is eat. We want to learn our neighbor's names. We want to begin with prayer. We want to listen to them. We want to eat. Church, let's do a little less talking and a little more eating. And who knows what Jesus might do. This morning, I want to make prayer available to anyone who wants to be prayed over. We're going to have some people in the back to pray over you. We're going to sing a song of invitation. If there's some other reason that you want to let us know about, or if you want to make today the day to make Christ your Lord and Savior, we're going to sing a song of invitation to make that possible. Let's stand and sing together.